Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, Masters of the Universe, the biggest bomb of 2026 is out. We've seen it. I'm excited to talk to you about it. It's not bad, actually. Believe it or not, it's not bad, but there's no way it makes its money back. We're going to talk about it, where Amazon is with it, whether or not it's getting a sequel, whether or not Jared Leto's any good, is Skeletor. He kind of is. Stick around for the review. We're going to take a look at some upcoming trailers. Bit of a slot park this week. I'm going to be honest with you. They're not the best trailers we've ever had, but it's fine. We got a Mark Wahlberg movie on here. We got a new Jacob Elordi movie, The Dog Stars. We're going to take a look at Hokum. This is Damian McCarthy's new film that came out earlier this year. Actually, I think it came out in early May, believe it or not, and just got swept over. Yeah, swept over by Obsession and Backrooms. So this is kind of that third horror movie you didn't see. It's on VOD. We took a look at it. Stars Adam Scott from Severance and Parks and Rec. He's a horror writer out in the moors when there's this witch and this hotel thing. It's a whole thing. We're going to get into it. Before we talk about everything, before we look at everything, we need to get into the news. A quick physical media announcement, which we don't do on this pod often, but I found this. I wanted to share it with y'all. Neon is running a buy one, get two sale on their website through June 14th. Buy one, get two. Not buy two, get one. Buy one, get two on everything. Posters, t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs. Most importantly, Blu-rays for the rest of us. I scooped up a few. I grabbed, God, they got a bunch of good stuff in here. Let me just roll through it real fast. Unfortunately, some stuff sold out because between when this went live and when we last did a show, some stuff's gone, but they have, at least normally in stock, Alpha, the new Julia Ducournau film. They got Crimes of the Future, David Cronenberg, Cuckoo, Exit 8, which we covered on this pod, Ferrari, which we covered on the pod, Michael Mann's new film, Hokum, which we're about to talk about, Immaculate, Sydney Sweeney, Infinity Pool, Long Legs, Keeper from Osgood Perkins, Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, which I grabbed, No Other Choice, limited edition, Parasite, we got Pig, starring Nick Nicolas Cage, Presence, Steven Soderbergh film, Shelby Oaks, Surratt, Revenge, Spencer, Splitsville. There's a lot of good stuff in here. A lot of good stuff. The Monkey, Titan is in here. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good picks. Buy one, get two. Most things in there are like $25. So if you got the means, it's like $10 for shipping, like $35-ish. You might be able to get a few Blu-rays, something you can watch at home. Andy, you were thinking about getting something in here. You haven't pulled the trigger on anything yet. What were you speculating? I'll tell folks what I got, and then we'll move on.
I needed a third choice, so I was looking at Titan and Cuckoo, which we reviewed on the show last year. Cuckoo was the horror movie starring Hunter Schafer,
and Dan Stevens, and Jessica Henwick.
Right, out in the woods in Germany, in Bavaria. Good movie, good scare. It's got some good scares. But yeah, I'm trying to decide on a third. Might actually, they have Revenge, which is Coralie Fargeau's first film before she did The Substance and totally blew up. So I've been meaning to take a look at that. So maybe I'll choose that one.
Have you seen that movie? I can't remember if you watched it.
I have not. I've been meaning to.
I heard it was a banger. People said we should cover it after we covered The Substance. Not Don't Worry, Darling. No, what is it, Coralie? Is that her first film before Coralie Fisher? Substance. That's what she did? Who am I thinking of? Yeah. Did that Kyle Gallner movie that we covered on the pod?
No, that's a different.
I'm thinking of a different
JT Molnar.
JT Molnar is who I'm thinking of. Yes, he did not do Revenge. That's Coralie Fargeau who got into The Substance. Got it. Yes, sorry. Anyway, Neon sale. Go check it out. We got to get to the news. Quick story this week. Hugh Jackman is going to be in the next Ridley Scott film. He's playing a pirate, which is not the first time Hugh Jackman's played a pirate, actually. What do you know about this story, Andy?
So this is one of these great Hollywood packages where they don't actually have anything yet. They're shopping this deal around to people, but they're like, we got a star, we got a director, we got a script or a story. And the script, of course, is Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, great American novel, sold over 100 million copies. They got Hugh Jackman to play the pirate Long John Silver, and is being directed by Ridley Scott. It's a formula for success. But when I first saw this, I was like, this is sounds like a little bit of a Pirates of the Caribbean reboot thing. And I know Disney is looking to get that franchise back off the ground. And 20th Century actually had a first look at this thing, and they passed on it only because they're Disney subsidiary and they don't want to have, Disney doesn't want competing pirate projects at the same time. So this is being shopped around. And I immediately thought of pirates, and instead of Captain Jack Sparrow, you're going to have Long John Silver played by the great Hugh Jackman. I think that could be a formula for success. Pirates always win.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance. It's a good chance Disney's making another Pirates of the Caribbean movie. And it's hard to believe, but it, because they're not moving on this Treasure Island film, specifically citing the pirate competition within their own brand, it seems to me that maybe that indicates that, yeah, somebody over there doesn't want to you know, dust up anything and confuse the brand with too many, I don't know, pirate projects. Hugh Jackman playing Long John Silver in Treasure Island sounds delightful. Script from Adolescence writer Jack Thorne, which we covered on the pod, that Netflix show that won a few Emmys. It was like limited series, real small, young kid. So I think him writing like the story of what's our name? Jim Hawkins, right? And Long John Silver facing off to try to find like this great treasure island. Like probably a good time. Like somebody who's obviously written for young adults. Like at least a script that one can perform. You're gonna put him opposite Hugh Jackman. Jackman played Hook, Captain Hook in that 2001 movie Pan. He's like bald and has like a weird wig on and looks real freakish. I never saw that movie, but when you sent me this story earlier in the week, I was like, oh God, it's the second time I'll see Hugh Jackman as like a weird pirate. But probably a bit more grounded. Can't imagine he's any better than Tim Curry's Long John Silver, a la Muppet Treasure Island. But yeah, I just think the secret like silver bullet in this story is like Disney is really wary of taking a pirate project right now. I haven't announced anything, but yeah, awful lot of smoke. Margot Robbie was circling a project. It might be time to get Johnny Depp back in. I mean, as Captain Sparrow, I know people probably don't want to see him again, but he's going to pull people into seats. And he's got that new Ty West. Johnny Depp has that new Ty West Christmas Carol movie coming out.
That's right.
This holiday. Yeah. So that'll be kind of his first exposure back to general audiences, I think. We'll see. We'll see how that performs. We'll see if people are interested at all. If that gets a bump in some interest, like maybe that's enough for Disney to move on it and put him in a new pirate project and kind of, I'd say hand off the franchise. Disney can't hand off anything. They'll put Jack Sparrow in a movie and act like they're going to hand off the franchise. But then at the end, he'll like keep the hat, kid, right? Like they'll do the Indiana Jones 4 thing and then he'll just come back for another one. So I don't know. But yeah, weird story. And Ridley Scott's making Treasure Island, right? Which like, God, Dog Stars. We're going to talk about the trailer for Dog Stars here in between shows. I feel like people are not really into that. I'm talking too much. I'm sorry. Anything else on this, Andy, before we jump to box office?
I think with Ridley Scott attached, you can at least expect like big action, big scope. He knows how to do like those big battle things. Of course, did Gladiator 2, Napoleon. Like he's big on spectacle, and that's what they're wanting. So, yeah, it could be the guy. And he's not, you know, he's not a Disney guy. He's not going to give you like cutesy Jack Sparrow. It's going to be maybe a little bit more serious than that. So, we'll see how it shakes out.
From the box office this week, Scary Movie has stunned with a $55 million opening, whereas Amazon's Masters of the Universe kind of lands with a thud at $29 million. It wouldn't be bad if it wasn't so expensive. Meanwhile, man, Scary Movie fans eating good, huh?
Yeah, the Scary Movie franchises, which has been really up and down over the last 25 years or so, Scary Movie, which is technically this 6, opened up to $54 million, $105 million globally, which is nearly the most it's ever made in the franchise. The franchise has been real up and down. It starts in 2000 with $155 million total gross, is a big hit, spawns a sequel, which immediately takes a big hit, makes about half as much money. And then the Wayans kind of lose control of it. The creative control goes to a different set of directors who kind of revive the franchise. Scary Movie 3 and 4 do pretty well. And then Scary Movie 5 bombs in 2013, making only $30 million. And then we don't see one for another 13 years. And then they're back. And we didn't see this for the show. We don't know how the humor plays. A lot of people have said it's not funny, but I think just because of brand recognition and people wanted to see maybe a raunchy comedy, they went and saw it.
I from people I know that have seen it, we didn't cover it for the pod. I'd kind of plan to, but honestly, we kind of talked about it after last week's show and just figured, yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be that funny. It's been really rewarding to hear from people and other critics that it is not funny. And it's like, oh, good. my instincts were correct. Yeah, I heard there's very few workable jokes in that movie. And it takes a lot of swings at it because that's what it's doing. But, you know, the brand recognition in it is just so good. They have so many horror properties they're spoofing. They got Terrifier this year and Megan's in there and even the Substance. And even though some of those are even already a couple years old, like, it's just refreshing to see something like another studio take a stab at, like, you know, the current horror trends in a different way. It's appropriate that Scary Movie spoofs Scream because that's kind of taking like what Scream does and running in a different direction. Like, just here, just seems like this one's not very funny. And I think that makes for tough watch. So I guess bummed, glad we didn't watch it. Bummed to people who did watch it, didn't enjoy it. I'm looking forward to talking about He-Man though, because that was a good time. Meanwhile, Super Mario Galaxy is breaking records, right?
Super Mario Galaxy movie becomes the first movie in 2026 to cross the $1 billion line. I think we might have had a couple by now this time last year. The Minecraft movie comes to mind, Nudge Out 2. So that's a big milestone. So we'll wait and see. We did not watch that for the show. You know, take the kids, take the family, that whole sort of thing. Masters of the Universe came in at $29 million, domestic $54 million globally. This is a huge bomb because it was a very expensive film, $200 million budget. Going to need like $500 million to break even. It's not going to get anywhere close to that. You'll hear more in our review, but I think it could become a hit on streaming.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think He-Man is going to have a bit of longevity. It's Masters of the Universe, I should say. Not a bad film. It has a lot in there that's working for it. We'll talk about it in just a second. As for Super Mario Galaxy, those Super Mario movies, man, it feels like we're approaching these movies are making so much money and so few entries so quickly and generating so much interest. It feels like we're approaching this nexus where like Mario is going to stop being so much of a game property to the next generation. And it's going to be a movie thing that also has games. You know what I mean? Like that is so much money so fast. It is now in the top 10 highest earners ever for series films, animated children's film series. It's right up there with Inside Out, Kung Fu Panda, Zootopia, like, crazy in two films, right? Two films. That's all it took. Obviously, it's got a lot of video games that precede it, and the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, and God knows what else. But like, still crazy, crazy that it made that much money. I'm so curious to see if a third entry, like where a third entry will land, because numbers say it'll do good, but man, the word of mouth coming out of Super Mario 2 was just awful. From every adult I heard, was just like, God, this movie is so mid. This is so not good. This is so not interesting. We didn't see it. I know we covered the first one on the pod. What do you think, Andy?
It's probably going to do well. And again, they'll milk it until it, you know, makes half of what it did. Until they start losing money or not really making a lot off of it, they'll continue to do it, I'm sure. 3 and 4 at the box office. Backrooms and Obsession. Backrooms had a pretty steep decline, about 70%. Still made 25.9 million, crossed the $200 million mark globally to become A24's highest grossing film of all time, surpassing Marty Supreme from just a few months ago. Big win for that. Backrooms continues to be a big sensation. Lots of memes and stuff on the internet. Every corporate entity you know posting some sort of Backrooms meme. It was pretty funny. And then Obsession held really strong in its fourth week, another 25.6 million, 225 globally, again on a sub $1 million budget. That continues to be probably the story of the year. Had, you know, a 7% decline or something from last week, and it's hard to say why this is happening. I have a theory. Zach and I were discussing this before, that I think it's Gen Z is discovering the love of cinema, in that it's the first time that they're having this movie that is by them, for them, and they're having a great time in the theater with their friends, and then they're going out and telling other people, and they're seeing it again. Because that's what these numbers indicate. It's that is repeat viewings. Like, you don't hold these numbers unless people are seeing it more than once. So I think it's just a fascinating story. It's going to continue to be in theaters for, you know, several more weeks. It's doing so well.
I think Obsession is doing well for a different reason, but after Andy told me his reason, that it's very like Gen Z oriented, and it's, you know, not your dad's horror movie. Your parents don't know what Obsession is, but your friends do, and they saw it last weekend, and you got to come see it this weekend with them. He's right. That is kind of the bigger reason it's doing well. But my thinking was because of Barker's portrayal of the character Nikki as a possessive girlfriend, right? Like, she is this kind of possessed woman after the protagonist Bear snaps this one wish Willow and turns her into something else entirely. But the way she presents to friends and people around her is like this possessive girlfriend who's like having screaming fits in the bathroom and like kind of freaking out in public with him whenever she tries to confront him. And it's like, I feel like so many of us watch that movie and think, God, I've been in a relationship like that, or I've seen people act like that before, you know, or I had a friend who dated this person who was just nuts. Like, it's such a relatable human thing that you just don't see in movies right now. And like, man, it's awesome. Like, just delightful. A little bit of that, a little bit of flavor. And the fact that it's just not your dad's horror movie, I think Obsession's an all-timer. It's really special. Yeah, not to mention the box office run. Go ahead.
Rounding out the top five, The Amazing Digital Circus, The Last Act. I had no idea what this was, and this is, again, it's the number fifth film, knocked out The Mandalorian and Grogu. So I had to look it up. This is another YouTube property based on an Australian web series of about 10 episodes, 20 to 30 minutes each, made $11.6 million domestic, $35 million global. I don't know what the budget is, but it can't have been that a huge amount. Again, these YouTube things are usually done pretty cheaply. So I had to learn about it. I tried watching the first episode, and it's just not for me. I got about 5 minutes in, and I said, I don't think I'm the target audience. And these videos are only from the last couple of years. They're not very old, but they're definitely for Gen Z, Gen Alpha.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that these things are catering to a younger audience, because this movie we're about to talk about kind of isn't, right? Masters of the Universe is like a 50-year-old property now. So it's interesting that this movie's coming out now and we're talking about it. I think that's reflected in its box office take, but we'll get into that too. Any other thoughts on the box office before we talk about Masters of the Universe?
I'm ready.
Andy, please take it away.
Masters of the Universe. So this is the long-awaited He-Man Masters of the Universe film based on the 80s toy line and animated series that was a big hit in the early 80s. Predates me even. I had to look up when the show was actually on. It was on from 82 to 85 of when I would have been an infant. The series, the toy line and series were a big hit, and then a movie took a while to get into development and did okay, which starred Dolph Lundgren. A remake was talked about for decades. It's been in development hell. It has been passed around to different studios, different directors, eventually lands with Travis Knight, who founded and works with Laika, the stop motion animation. So we get the story of Adam, Prince Adam, played by Nicholas Galitzine, who we've seen in Red, White, and Royal Blue, as well as, what's that movie with Anne Hathaway? I can't remember it. The rom-com with Anne Hathaway. He's in that as well.
I want to say Anyone But You, but that's not it. It's I know what you're talking about.
It's got a forgettable title.
He's like a young pop star, and she's like a mom. Come on, I'll look it up. Go ahead. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. Anyways, so he is Prince Adam of Eternia, a fantastical, magical kingdom. Very early on in the film, gets going. Right away, they're attacked by the evil Skeletor, voiced by Jared Leto, who's actually churning out a pretty great performance, I must say. The kingdom is attacked. Prince Adam is whisked away to Earth, sent to be safe. He grows up there 20 years. He pines to come back. Eventually, you know, the powers that be gather together. It's the sword. He finds it, eventually makes his way back to Eternia, has to meet up with his old crew, collect everyone, fight the bad guy. Lots of stunts, lots of action, tons going on, lots to talk about. Zach, what do you think?
So I like Masters of the Universe. It's not a perfect movie, but I think it manages to capture this like Saturday morning cartoon feel just in its opening moments, like just in the opening crawl of Nicholas Galitzine coming over like via voiceover and being like, "Hi, I'm Adam. Let me tell you about my world. This is Eternia." It's not as stupid as that, but I'm basically that. But Eternia is presented as this just mystical land where anything can happen. Goblins and dragons and griffins and medieval castles and whatever. And they show you Castle Grayskull that looks like a sick skull, which is not actually where Skeletor lives, which I got wrong, right? But Skeletor also is like this sick skull thing with the red eyes. And then you see all these dudes with like big hands and powers and a cat that talks. And like, it just seems like this big awesome place to tell stories in. And then we get whisked away to Earth, and then we get a little bit of our, okay, here's Nick Galitzine and his pink button up. And then we eventually we get to Eternia. It's a framework of a film you've seen a dozen times, but it manages to work because it leans in far enough to this like 10-year-old attitude of like, these characters have goofy names and are unrealistic. And kind of stick the landing in a way that I didn't expect. Like, I end up enjoying it. Idris Elba is a delight, as Duncan, kind of captain of the guard, who ends up being this kind of drunk loser who's got to get himself back together by the end of the film. We got Camila Mendes in this film. Nicholas Galitzine's a lot of fun. Believe it or not, Jared Leto's Skeletor is kind of the breakout, which is crazy. I never would have thought Jared Leto would be the standout good performance in the movie, but man, he's really kind of excellent as an animated skeleton man. Lots to talk about here. Where do you want to jump in?
Well, I give a few of my thoughts. Yeah, I enjoyed this too. It's, you know, the paint by number hero's journey. It's perfect for younger audiences. I was thinking about, I compared it to Mandalorian and Grogu. That's kind of the comp, for it. And while that movie is trying to be for too many audiences, Masters of the Universe is squarely for the kids. It's not trying to be for, Well, the property is 50 years old. It's, you know, it's for kids, squarely. And I think that kind of helps it. That's just, it's a lot more focused than The Mandalorian. That said, it's got problems. It's way too long. It is 2 hours and 20 minutes. And when I was booking my ticket, I was like, oh no, that is way too long for this kind of movie. We'll talk about that a little bit. Super long. But I think the action, it has really good action and really good effects. I think it's really creative, more creative than The Mandalorian. Again, I was thinking how much of, look, it's Jabba the Hutt, who I've seen for the past 50 years, where I got to see lots of new things and meet new characters in this story. Our performances are really strong by everyone. Allison Brie's also in the cast as Evelyn. And again, Jared Leto doing Shakespeare as Skeletor. And I think it helps that you can't see his face and that he's doing a stage actor voice. Like, he doesn't sound like Jared Leto either. So I think that helps. It's got problems, but it also has a lot that works.
Yeah, I think the creative direction has got to come down front to director Travis Knight, right? Like, who's only done a few features before this. Most of his work has been at Laika, right? Like, his next film upcoming actually is Wildwood, which is crazy that he's got that coming out, I think, this year, right? Like, I think that's two films in 1 year for Travis Knight, but one stop motion. His other film is Kubo and the Two Strings in 2016, which we covered on this pod. And he did Bumblebee in 2018, that last Transformers movie. And then it's been quiet. He's just been producing. He's been producing other Leica features. But then here we have Master of the Universe 8 years after Bumblebee. Still a lot of VFX, for sure. It's a very VFX-heavy flick. But I'm surprised how much of it is practical. I noticed in our first, like, opening fight sequence, just a few minutes in, the Captain of the Guard, Duncan, and Drizelba is having this fight with this character, Trapjaw. All the characters have their goofy old Saturday morning cartoon names. Love it. Doesn't hurt it, honestly. Like, go for it. It would be lame if you tried to make it real and serious, right? Like, it's fine keeping it lame, but keeping it simple. But yeah, we get in this fight and we're seeing these awesome shots of like crash in zooms and slow-mo effects and big pullouts and like all this really good fight footage. And I noticed, like, his helmet is definitely practical. Like, that's definitely like a plastic rubber helmet some prop department made. And then when, like, Nicholas Galitzine is like wearing his thing and swinging his sword around, it's like, okay, that's really there. Even like Skeletor's fit. The only parts of Skeletor that are CG are his face and his cloak. The blue muscle suit is real. The boots and hands are real. I don't know if it's Leto in it, but all of that's there. Almost all your background guys, your goofy goblin stuff, all dudes in goofy fits. And like, on one hand, it looks a lot like, I don't know, like Marvel's Thor, like when we're in like Valheim or whatever, Valhalla, wherever Thor lives. On the other hand, Asgard. It looks a little bit Asgard. Thank you, Asgard. On the other hand, like, shit, somebody in the comments is going to be such a dick about that. On the other hand, like, it looks a little bit like Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness. It's like a bunch of people standing around in costumes, you know, like, and like, I think that kind of helps it because it's a bit cheesy. Like, a lot of that goes with Nicholas Galitzine's performance as Adam. He is not necessarily putting the film on his shoulders, but it didn't have to. It's really the world of He-Man that's got to work. It's the Masters of the Universe franchise. It's not him. So he doesn't got to do it all. And he manages to be tongue-in-cheek and well, we'll get into performances in a minute. Sorry, Andy, take this away from me. I'm wandering off a cliff here.
So this movie is a mix of a number of movies you've seen. And again, you can tell that it's changed hands and directors and the script's probably had 100 drafts. It's a little bit Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a little bit Thor Ragnarok. We got to put the team together, that sort of thing. It even has a little bit of the look of Thor and the soundtrack, which the soundtrack by Daniel Pemberton, who did the Across the Spider-Verse, the Spider-Verse films, incredible. Like that, the score is doing a lot of heavy lifting too. Immediately added it to my long running film score playlist. But that's part of the feeling of it, and it has a lot of humor. And I think the humor is unfortunately kind of weak, and you can tell it's got that Marvel style quippy writing where they're trying to make jokes all the time. Most of the jokes just don't land, and then for some reason they might land for like a 6-year old, but they don't really land for anyone else. But then they also shove in a bunch of like sexual innuendo jokes, and I'm just like, I was cringing so hard. I was just like, just stop. You don't have to. Like the parents don't need this. It was tough, but it's that kind of very lighthearted, very kind of self-aware kind of writing, which is a little dated now. Like this movie 8 years ago would be a huge hit, but it's just that now we've moved on as a filmmaking culture. So it feels a little dated in that stuff. And that's part of what doesn't work is that this, like all like quipping constantly, jokes that don't really land.
I like that Nicholas Galitzine's Adam is like kind of grounded in the reality we, the audience, understand. Like, because when he is blasted to Earth at like 10 years old with his sword and he loses it, he has to try to find it. And it takes him a few years to figure it out, which is where we kind of get a time jump to him being older. And he's like on a date, just telling this person he's dating, oh yeah, so I came from this other planet and I'm trying to get back. And once I find my sword, I'll have it all figured out. And she thinks he's nuts, right? And like, it would have been so easy for him to be like, haha, no, nothing's wrong. I'm fine. How are you? You know, and try to be this kind of lame character that's trying to fit in the world he's in now. But no, he's very true to himself and very true to us, the audience, that way. And we get a nice push in on him where he's like really sincere and really tore up about this, which is nice. You get some good emotional acting from Galitzine. A lot of that in the film. I think it gives him like a good sense of humor and manages to keep Earth and Eternia like just far enough away from him and us that we can kind of enjoy it with him. Not doesn't always work. There's a whole sequence where he's trying to get a sword out of a comic book shop and it's like real goofy and stinted. But once we get into the world, it's fun. Idris Elba's good. Jared Leto, Skeletor. He's like, I'm going to say 70% Sauron, Lord of Darkness, and like 30% Mike Myers, Dr. Evil, out of the Austin Powers movie. Yeah. Like, he's mostly evil, but yeah, he'll also do some goofy stuff or laugh too long. And like, because you just lose the Leto image, he's just not there. You just get like the distilled, way over the top acting that Leto does. Then throw some pitch shifting on and some audio effects, and like, yeah, great performance. Skeletor works great as Jared Leto. Like, really surprised. I don't know if this movie got a sequel, but he should probably return for whatever the next project is, because he's very good at it. I mean, God, Alison Brie sure knows how to read evil dialogue. She's great. You know, everybody else is fine. Kamala Mendes is fine. Idris Elba's great. I don't know why he keeps taking movies like this. Like, he's so goofy, but he's good in it. So, hey, I'm glad he's here.
Yeah, I heard this commentary that, you know, Idris Elba should really be a bigger star, but unfortunately, he just has to pick these projects where you're like third or fourth build behind, like, you know, Chris Hemsworth. Or something. Like, he's never quite the leading guy especially for stuff like this. I think again the creativity is what I felt like I was seeing stuff that was a little more fresh. You know, there's aerial battles, there's land battles. It is a little violent depending on your, you know your kids the best. It's definitely not as violent as the Mandalorian, the Murderlorian.
Yeah.
But like I said, I thought it was really creative. Like, there's, we meet a cast of characters: Ram Man, Trapjaw, and Evelyn, Fisto, King, lots of kings and queens. So it's just like, it's kind of a throwback to the early 80s when they were doing lots of sword and sandal kind of films, and they made this property for kids. And it's just nice to see new characters' designs and have to just see new things. At the same time, the property is a little dated. I saw a stat that the target audience, or the like 30% of the ticket buyers, were age 45 to 54. So that's the generation, that's like Gen X that it's going after. Maybe they'll take their kids or grandkids, but it's a bit of a swing and a miss.
Yeah, and considering it costs like $200 million to make, or like 160 or whatever costs, and only made $30 million opening, like, It'll go to Amazon. Amazon will get clicks. It'll be on the front page a minute. Like, it will eventually, I think, generate enough revenue to earn back what it is. But this is not going to be seen as a victory or success, I think, for Knight or Amazon Prime or the property. So I'm not predicting a sequel for this, probably. I'd be surprised. Maybe like a mini series would be the move. Give it like 8 episodes, right? Do a She-Ra Princess of Power series or something. If she comes from this, I'm not even sure, but you know, maybe there's something there. You can have some people come back and reprise some voices like on the cheap. I do think this is good. It's a shame it's kind of not getting another one, because I definitely think you could probably tell another story in this big world they've got, Eternia, but I don't know. I think some stuff looks really cool. Yeah, it's very 80s, very slick. Some stuff's a little over the top. Like you said, about a third of the jokes hit, maybe. Like, it's definitely a lot that just kind of don't work. He works in HR, and like, that's kind of goofy, and people are like, we're in Eternia. You can't talk through your problems. You got to solve it with violence. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Yeah, like very 80s for sure. Gotcha. But fun. Like fun and a good time in a way that I didn't... Like, it would have been so easy for this to be like Ant-Man. A movie I kept thinking of when I was watching was Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Right? Like a Disney production. Big deal. Where our characters like shrink down and go to this like fantasy world. Right? Like through Acts 2 and 3 before they have to get out. Right? And they got to fight this thing. This other purple clad villain, and like, it's so much worse than this. Ant-Man and the Lost Quantumania is so much worse than this. Like, it's flat and boring and dull, and the cameras bounce everywhere. You just don't care. And this, meanwhile, like, manages to kind of work. Too long, I agree. Too long. Should have been like 90 minutes, like 100 maybe. But it gets there. I think Masters of the Universe is in general a creative victory, just maybe not a box office one. Any other thoughts, recommendations?
Just real quick, I agree. It, again, way too long at 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah. It could lose an action sequence or two. It starts to drag a little bit in the middle. It's the kind of thing, though, I think it'll do really well at home viewings when it hits streaming on Amazon, probably in like a month, if not sooner. Plop it down in front of the kids. Lots of bright, shiny stuff to look at. Nothing offensive, not too violent. So I think it might be a streaming sensation.
Yeah, I think there's something good here. Yeah, like, it's just not enough to get people to get out and spend money. But still, glad we saw it. It's one of those things for the pod that, like, I probably wouldn't have watched. I'm just pleased how I ended up seeing it. Andy, would you recommend Masters of the Universe?
You know, I would. With some caveats, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun. Again, lots of action, lots of big special effects. Fun performances from our leads, Nicholas Gleeson and Jared Leto. It's got problems. Like I said, it's a little bit too long, a little bit too much going on. You could probably cut a few sequences. Some of the dialogue doesn't work. It's a dated property. So I would say recommend in theaters. If you're a little on the fence, save it for streaming.
Yeah, I think I'd recommend it. It's kind of a good time. I saw it on a big premium format, like XD, big screen. I caught it on a Saturday morning. People clapped at the end. Feels like Saturday morning cartoons. It's fun. It's lighthearted. It's much better than like its other VFX heavy fare, a la like Disney's Ant-Man. Like, much better than that. It's a good time. Surprisingly fun. Probably not going to make its money back. Bummer. Not going to get a sequel. But that's Ant-Man. That's He-Man. That's Masters of the Universe. We got to talk about some trailers, Andy. What do we call this segment?
It's time for the trailer park. So we are getting into fall releases, which can sometimes be a dumping ground. And we have three interesting trailers to talk about. The first one is called By Any Means, which stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II and Mark Wahlberg. Mateen II plays an FBI agent in the 60s who's investigating the deaths of civil rights leaders in the Mississippi, in the Jim Crow South at the time. Of course, being, even though he's a police officer, being black at that time in that area, hard to get, you know, a good investigation done. He teams up with a mob guy played by none other than Mark Wahlberg, with a terrible nose piece. And Mark Wahlberg could get into places that Yahya Abdul cannot. And so they make this unlikely duo. It's very macho dad cinema. Lots of people getting beat up, which is Mark Wahlberg's favorite thing to do on and off screen.
Yeah.
This looks real rough. This looks real rough. And this is a September 4th release.
Yeah, how did noted Hollywood racist Mark Wahlberg get to play a white savior alongside Yahya Abdul-Mateen? And really, like, how far is Yahya Abdul-Mateen II fallen? Man, he did. He got an Emmy for Watchmen. He was in that new Matrix movie. He just had so many. He was doing Aquaman. He was Black Manta. Like, he just had so much cool stuff lined up. And now it's like, oh, God, what is he? He was Candyman. Now he's doing By Any Means with Mark Wahlberg. It's a bummer. It looks like, I don't know, Green Book for violence, right? It's like Driving Miss Daisy, except for beating the hell out of people. it looks fine. I don't think they're going to solve racism by the end. Like, I have a feeling at the end of 90 minutes, there's still going to be problems in the world of By Any Means. But hey, maybe Yahya Abdul-Mateen will get along with the not racist mobster. It just looks awful. It's a bummer. It's a bummer. It's a bummer. I hope Yahya Abdul-Mateen finds better work. We're going to talk about the trailer for The Dog Stars. This is a new Ridley Scott feature. We actually covered this teaser on the pod a while back. This stars Jacob Elordi as a young, I'm going to say, do you say widower? Yeah, right. Man who's lost his husband, who's lost his wife, right, in some kind of apocalypse. He now flies a yellow biplane around a apocalypse-torn country alongside his dog. Traveling the country and seeing the devastation that's been wrought, and I think transporting packages. Margaret Qualley is in this film, meets her along the way as another survivor. Josh Brolin seems to be maybe some sort of antagonistic force. There's some sort of zombies or something that's happened to these people that have created these kind of plague-ridden masses that chase them. There's guns, there's bullets. It's a Ridley Scott film, right? Like Gladiator, Ridley Scott, Last Duel, Ridley Scott, Alien, Ridley Scott. You would think this would be a hit. It's got Jacob Elordi and Margaret Qualley in it and Josh Brolin, but like, it just seems like reviews are pretty soft, and it seems like people are saying this movie doesn't actually have it. I don't know, but looks like it'd be cool. Odd title, based on a book. What do you think of The Dog Stars, Andy?
This looks like the more palatable version of The Road, which is the 2007 Cormac McCarthy novel and film starring Viggo Mortensen. Very tough watch. But a similar thing where there's a group of survivors and they're escaping roving groups of cannibals or you know, some sort of, you know, the people are the real enemy in the post-apocalyptic right. world.
Man, this is the most dangerous game of all. Yeah,
exactly. This movie's only 100 minutes, which actually seems too short for this sort of thing. You would expect it to be a big, like, Ridley Scott actioner, and it seems like a kind of a quick thing. It looks like a movie we've seen 100 times before. We might watch it because of, we'll see what the weekend is like. Ridley Scott's directing, so there'll probably be some good action, but yeah, this seems, again, it's the fall dumping ground.
Yeah, the ringing endorsement of, if there's nothing else good at the theater, I guess I'll go see The Dog Stars. That's really funny. One more to talk about. I found this one today. I figured we'd end up striking it from the outline, but it's been a lean week, so I'm excited to talk about it. Andy, what is this trailer?
Whale Fall. So this is, again, another fall release, comes out on October 16th. This stars newly minted star Austin Abrams, who we first met in last summer's Weapons. Can't believe it's almost been a year since that sensation. He plays a scuba diver of some sort, gets swallowed by a whale, and that's the whole movie. But it seems to be one of those things where it really puts you in the moment. It's supposed to be a thriller. He gets swallowed by a giant whale, has to figure out how to escape and get out on, you know, get swallowed whole. He's got his air supply, but you know, he could be digested or something like that at any time. I thought the trailer like looked kind of good in a theater. It gave me a lot of anxiety. I was like, this might be affected for that sort of thing. Maybe. I'm not sure. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah. I think the thing that's interesting about this trailer is that it gives you a whole scene, which I really didn't expect. Because, yeah, you read the byline on IMDb or, like, on Twitter, wherever you see the trailer posted, and it's like, yeah, a film about a scuba diver who gets swallowed by a whale and has 1 hour to escape, like, because his air is running out. Like, that's what's going on. You're like, well, that sounds kind of lame. Then you whip open the trailer, and it's like, oh, Josh Brolin's in this. Okay. Oh, Austin Abrams is in this. Yeah, like, coming up on Resident Evil, Austin Abrams, hot off of Weapons, Austin Abrams. And then you get a whole scene. It just gives you a scene from the film. It doesn't give you anything else. You get a couple other flashes of imagery, but otherwise you get kind of this truncated version of the scene when our man, Austin Abrams, scuba diver, goes down into the kind of the depths and he runs into this whale and has this escape sequence where he tries to get away. And it's very practical looking scuba work. Like it looks like a scuba diver really getting drug around down there. And he ends up getting pulled in his mouth and it's this gaping maw thing. And then it kind of goes too far and becomes goofy. Because ultimately, I don't know how it's not going to be goofy. It's a movie about a guy inside a whale for an hour. But like maybe it'll be like Buried, like or one of those other bottom movies. And then he kind of gets swallowed and you get a couple other flashes and then the logo whale fall. It's like, huh, you know, at least they went for it. At least they gave me something different. It could have been much more lame. Like, I appreciate that they kept me enraptured for a couple minutes. That's the trailer for Whale Fall. It's going to be fall. A whale fall coming this fall. That's coming out October 16th.
Yeah. Like I said, it might be a little bit of a thriller. October is a little bit better of a release date, but who knows? Strange choice for a movie.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, we got to talk about one more film before we wrap up the podcast this week. Very excited to talk about it. The movie is Hokum. So, Hokum is the story of Om Bauman, a horror novelist who retreats to a remote Irish inn to scatter his parents' ashes at the secluded Bilberry Woods Hotel in Ireland. Om's played by Adam Scott, we saw recently on Severance or Parks and Rec over on NBC. Mr. Bauman is kind of a jerk. He's a horror novelist who writes very dark work and does not get along with anybody because he's got a bit of a dark past himself. One night at the hotel bar, he strikes up a bit of a conversation, maybe the start of some sort of relationship with this young employee there, Fiona, who he kind of gets along with. But then Fiona kind of goes missing through a couple of odd events. And it turns out that there may be some information inside the locked honeymoon suite on the top floor of the hotel. So in an attempt to get in, as the hotel is closing for the season, Om, along with a man he meets out in the woods nearby, out in these Irish woods where he had left his mother and father's ashes, travel into the hotel after hours, after things have closed, to break into the honeymoon suite and hopefully find some answers about this missing employee. The movie is Hokum. It is from Damien McCarthy, a director of Oddity, which we covered on this very podcast, on this channel. You can find our review back there. Andy, what did you think of Hokum?
So I thought this was real up and down. Like every 20 minutes, it was like gaining me and losing me and then gaining, then we're back kind of constantly. I really liked how it starts with this. Adam Scott plays this real insufferable writer, goes out to Ireland to, spread his parents' ashes. He's a jerk to everyone in this secluded hotel. And it's very like A24 starting this. I was like, oh, we're going to have like a personal piece of his like grief and loss. And then it kind of abandons that completely after the first 20 minutes. And then it turns into a mystery when someone goes missing. And then it kind of turns into a thriller. And it takes a little bit of time to get to the horror. Each element kind of works on its own, but it doesn't do a very good job of weaving it all together. I got kind of bored in places. I did feel like it finished strong, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think mostly this works. I think it's a good bottle feature. You have a character who is specifically a writer who is trapped in a small setting where horrifying things are happening and that are out of their control, that are out of their understanding, right? And they have to attempt to escape while also hopefully learning something. Like that's kind of the hero's journey here. Like you're trapped and you got to get out. And I think our setting, the Bilberry Woods Hotel, is pretty solid. Damien McCarthy's last film, Oddity, takes place out in Ireland as well, out in like the moors, right? Like it's at a small set. It's a small house, I think, specifically, where there's a woman who's got kind of a sordid past and a specific, there's like a creature, I'd say, that's in that place with her that you sort of learn about more over the course of this film. Very isolating, very quiet. This shares some of that same DNA, albeit much darker. That was something I noticed specifically in my version that I watched. So whenever you watch this movie, make sure it's not too dark. I don't know if I had HDR settings weird or anything, but it's an awful lot darker in the honeymoon suite, and it's awful quiet. And there's something going on down there that nobody quite understands, and it's very Irish folklore. This is a folk tale. That's kind of what we're going for. So I think the place we're in is really good stuff. Scott, however, is like just a little too insufferable in the open. The first like 20-ish minutes of this movie, it's like no music, real quiet, real simple, real tamped down. He's just arriving at the hotel and kind of learning about how things are going. And I was like, I'm bored. Like, this is not working. Once we get down there, though, like once we get to that bit, I got through all that in my open in the intro. Once you get to the suite, it's all gas. We're moving and shaking and things are happening. And because the hotel is closing for the season, it's a little bit Shining, right? Like the Overlook Hotel closing. Somebody's always been the caretaker. There may be something down there at the horror of somebody maybe being missing and still alive. Like all of that creeps in as Scott ends up down there alone and can't get out and realizes like how troubled he may really be.
Yeah. So there's a number of things that kind of don't make sense to me. So the honeymoon suite is like off limits. There's a big like cage lock to it. No one's allowed up there. No one's been up there in years. Of course, we end up going to this room. It is enormous. It's like three rooms big. It's an enormous place. And I was like, I feel like if you owned a hotel, you wouldn't close off this big of a space. So that part meant like kind of just makes no sense to me. I have to like ignore the business of part.
Maybe
of
they don't have capitalism in Ireland or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's not important for them there.
Yeah, it definitely is a mix of a number of movies. Like I said, it's part thriller, part horror, part suspense, part mystery. Yeah, I definitely big The Shining vibes when they're clearing out their like last day at the hotel before we shut down for the season. Very much reminded me of that. Like I said, but when we get into the you know, the folklore of it a little bit, we meet a fun character named Jerry who's like, well, you know, there's fairies and other mystical things about if you'll only open your mind and also take these mushrooms that might help.
Yeah.
As well, that's a little clunky. What did you think of the scares, like in the horror bits of it all?
Well, I think you're right. It is you would say it's a collage or a pastiche of horror themes, right? Like it's not any one specific thing, which I think hurts the runtime a little bit, because you keep thinking, what's going to be like the silver bullet scare down here? Is there like a witch, or is there like a ghost, or is it like a malicious person, or like what is the thing? And it turns out it's kind of a number of things, and you never really get the satisfaction of any one thing at the top. So the horror I was like fine on, honestly. I was a little disappointed, to be honest. There's a couple of images very specifically in the trailer like that are very very specific images. A guy with some big eyes and goat head thing, like, and like sort of peeking through curtains. That is like the most small thing, and it's barely in here. It's just like you could have completely forgotten that was even in there for the trailer, but instead it's used as like a big reveal. Like it just feels like a lot of it's hidden. It's a lot of what you can't see, right? It's a lot of the imagination, and I had trouble with that. A, because the version I watched was just real dark. Maybe it was my monitor settings, but B, dude, because we just watched Backrooms, and Backrooms is so bright, and you can see everything, and that's the point. Like, they don't try to hide really anything from you, but this movie felt like it was pulling punches. You could have showed me something really scary, but instead you sat back and expected me to come up with it. And that doesn't quite work when I'm coming out of Backrooms and have just seen this like horrifying stuff laid bare, you know, like the real human condition. I also thought of the movie 1408 starring John Cusack and Samuel Jackson, where John Cusack plays a writer who is trapped in a hotel room and can't curse hotel room and can't get out. And like has these different kind of experiences in there trying to figure it out. That movie also very bright. Very bright film. It's a very well lit movie. And this movie, like, I just kind of struggled to connect with the scares or the character, because it was like, it's just quiet, it's dark, and it's just real turned down, just waiting for you to get spooked.
Yeah, a lot of the scares are predictable. It really relies a little bit too much on jump scares that most of them you kind of see coming. A couple were effective. I do think it does have some scary stuff kind of towards the end that I thought worked really well, but it just takes so long to get there. You kind of don't care. Also, Owen Bauman's, Adam Scott's character, his character journey kind of doesn't make sense to me. Like he starts off as a jerk and, you know, ideally he like learns a little bit more about himself and the world and becomes a better person through this harrowing experience. It just kind of feels a little forced, a little rushed. I think it is not an improvement, but a big step up from Oddity. It's a bigger film. It's more, you know, more expensive, bigger budget. You got a real star. But it's not quite the leap we were hoping for, kind of a bigger feature.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Scott's protagonist here is just too volatile. Not only does he have a horrible past, he's a drinker. He's very mean. He's very cruel to people around him. And then also there are events that happen to him in this movie that he does to himself, like acts of self-harm, that are so challenging that he ends up coming back from. And I'm just like, I cannot connect to this person at all. Like, he's just a shred of a man left, you know, which is kind of part of the journey. But yeah, like, it's mostly him by himself. I was reading on IMDb, apparently he had spent a lot of time kind of alone on set for a lot of this. It's like being quiet, just a few people on set, not a lot of other actors. So like, that helped him dial into the performance for sure, of this like isolation. But I think it hurts the film. I like that he starts to travel down there with somebody else. That pulled me in. It would have been easy for it to be like 1408 and for him to just be some skeptical writer who's like, the honeymoon suite, huh? Yeah, right. I'll check that out. And then just go in there. But no, like, he ends up kind of getting pulled in a way that I think like tugs at these strings of fate that'll tie in later. I did like the kind of A24 materialist open. It opens in a completely different setting. You're like, where am I watching the right movie? And like, that ends right, up having exactly. A nice bring around to the end. Like, you're right. It's better than Oddity. I do think there's room for growth. What I want to know is, there's always room for growth. Who am I kidding? What I want to know is May horror, right? We got Backrooms, we got Obsession, Hokum, right? How are you ranking this?
Passenger as well. I think that's the other thing that hurts Hokum is that two great horror movies just came out, Obsession and Backrooms. Obsession, like, really scary, like probably one of the scariest things I've seen in the last like 5 10 years. Really gets under your skin. So yeah, if this were to come out a month or so earlier, I think it may be have had a better reception. Passenger was another horror movie that came out between Obsessions and Backrooms, about someone stopping in car picking up another supernatural thing. Again,
yeah, lots of horror. I remember a trailer for that. Yeah. Okay, I remember Passenger.
Lots of horror in May. My ranking would probably be Obsession first, Backrooms, Hokum, Passenger, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is excellent. Yeah. Lots of horror this month.
It's probably Obsession too at the top for me, but like, I really was charmed by Backrooms. It was just doing something different in a way that I don't know, connected with. Maybe Backrooms for me. Either way, huge month for May in horror. I think going in next year, we're going to have to remember, like, come May. Like, is this just horror month now? Is this where we're at? I don't know. Either way, Andy, would you recommend Damien McCarthy's Hokum?
This is perfect for streaming if you're a horror head or you're interested in this kind of Irish folklore. I think there are some things that are going for it. The setting, I think, is really effective. Set design, that sort of thing. Like, they're out there in the woods in rural Ireland. Adam Scott, I think, is doing good as this kind of jerk writer who doesn't, kind of a misanthrope in general. The thrilling stuff works. Some of the horror works. Sometimes it doesn't. A little bit too much going on. Could probably cut it down. It's an hour 45. So I would say it's perfect for streaming.
Yeah, I'm with you. Watch it at home, I think. It's probably a great time in a theater, honestly, because it's so dark. Like, it's just hard to see. There's not a lot of lights in this movie. I think being able to like really peer in and be able to pluck out details, like whether or not there's some motion back there in a shot or like the glint of a couple of eyes maybe, would have gone a long way like to helping me enjoy this. Like, I tried to watch it on like a monitor in a dark room, and like even then I couldn't really connect with it. But even still, like, I like Hokum. I think I like Hokum more than Oddity. I like Adam Scott doing horror movies. I'm looking forward to what Damien McCarthy's doing next. Not a bad feature. Watched on streaming. Make sure your HDR settings are good or whatever. God willing. Make sure you're set when you're watching it. Go check the trailer on YouTube if you're not sure, like I did, and then find out that you've been watching it too dim. Anyway, that's Hokum. That's episode 339 Off-Script Film Review. That's the whole kit and caboodle. What are we watching next week, Andy?
So, big week next week. Steven Spielberg has a new movie. Disclosure Day, that's out this Friday, which is the 12th. Yeah, that's right. Really excited about that. Don't know a lot about that. We know some sort of language thing. There's aliens involved, it looks like. That stars Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor. A lot of fun. Looking forward to that. And then we're gonna figure out our second movie. We might see an action martial arts film called The Furious. Which I've seen a couple trailers. Looks really good. Looks like those old kind of Jet Li, Tony Jaa, Jackie Chan style movies. Might take a look at that. That's in theaters. And then, or we might find something on streaming. Not a lot of streaming offerings this week, but we'll figure out our second film. But Disclosure Day and possibly The Furious for next week.
Yeah. If you enjoyed the podcast today, if you like what we're doing here on Offscript Film View, best way to support us is subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening to us or watching us on right now. If you're on any of the usual podcast outlets where the show goes out every Tuesday, you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia. We're over there on for your audio edition preferred. People who prefer the audio edition of the podcast. If you like it on video, check us out on YouTube. Tons of stuff going up on the YouTube channel every single week. Instagram, TikTok, we got shorts, working on reels, something like that. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can follow us over there. DM us, leave a comment, throw a like on something we do. Just get in the mix. Every little bit helps, I promise. You can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, and you can email us correspondence directly from you to us at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. And thanks for watching. Shoot. Thanks for watching the show. Let us know if you saw Masters of the Universe. Please share your thoughts on Hokum. Tell me if I should actually go out and see Scary Movie, because for people in my life, they've been like, nah, it's a good thing y'all skipped it. And let me tell you, rare. Normally we skip the hot movie of the week, and people are like, what do you mean you're not watching it? Oh my God, how could you not go see? But Scary Movie, everybody's been like really cool, and they're like, yeah, nah, it's kind of a big miss. So good to know we still got it. Thanks for listening. From all of us to Offscript, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for listening.